Hi guys, welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your host Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name of the podcast. If you can't read or something, then I don't know how you found this video anyway. Yeah, I think this is the 21st episode. I don't know. I think I've been doing it for about 5 months now, and I don't know if I've got any of the episode numbers right. I just kind of guess and go with it that way. But I think 5 months in a row without missing one, I'm showing everyone else how to do it in the esports scene, because everyone gets a bit fucking lazy, especially my competitors. I'm setting the precedent. Keeping it going, and this episode is one I've been wanting to do for a while, especially the topic-wise. I really wanted to talk about the UK esports scene. Obviously, I'm as English as they come. The only thing that doesn't make me as English as can come, actually, is I don't have like a flag tattooed on my ass. I think that's the only thing that can make me more English and British than what I am already. And obviously, the UK esports scene is not quite up there with the likes of North America and such, even though that's much bigger, and we'll get into that, but that's what this is gonna really go into, but there will be some tangents throughout the way, as always in my podcast, because I can't stick on a subject for too long, especially when this work's so busy. I just need to chat shit for a while, so I might get into a bit of that. But today I'm joined by, right, let's see if I get this right with no prep really, Nick Utley, co-founder and, did you say owner or CEO? Both.
CEO and co-founder.
CEO of all right, I'm gonna say it wrong just to annoy you. Diabolus e-gaming.
That's not so bad, actually. We have had worse. But Diabolus Esports, yes.
Yeah, same thing, isn't it? Like Diabolus Cyber Athletics Limited or something.
Yeah. Well, we're working on it. The name's a work in progress.
As we go along. But so, yeah, am I right in saying, oh, you will think this no matter what, but you're one of the more prominent organisations in the UK esports scene?
It'd be nice to be known as that. Yeah, I'd say so. I think we kind of were, but we'll get into that a little bit, because we've obviously made a bit of a jump into North American scene as well as like Europe as well. So
okay, well, we'll discuss that, because I have no fucking clue about it. The thing is with the esports industry, like staying on top of it, I know basically everything that goes on, but I don't know it in depth a lot of the time, because I see everything that goes in and out of Esports Insider. I can tell you exactly who G2 Esports is partnered with, but I can't tell you the details and the terms of each one, you know. It's kind of like that. So my surface knowledge, like, I'm really good to go to for, like, quick snaps and stuff, but a lot of the time when it comes to going into, like, real depth about, like, rosters and such, like, I don't follow the actual, like, competitive side of stuff. It's solely the business side. So I will be very ignorant to a lot of this stuff. But for my own... I want to know this myself, and I think it could be good just to introduce the viewers and listeners and such. And I hate really doing this, especially on podcasts, but like a little bit of your background would be great, especially like how you discovered esports and such. You don't have to tell me absolutely everything in detail, but just like an overview of your kind of path and such.
Absolutely. So I started, like, my journey in esports started a long time ago, you know, so I'm one of the older gamers in the scene. I'm not a young buck. I'm in my 30s and stuff, and you know, just the age of the, you know, we grew up with the internet just being a new thing, like, you know, just coming out and things like that. So like online gaming was a big thing, and I remember the early days of it, like back in sort of like, you know, Phantasy Star Online and so on and so on and forth. It's like really early things on dial-up. So, you know, when it comes to sort of like esports being over the internet, it's always been a thing that's been part of what has just made my sort of like gaming history a thing. But in terms of where I came from in general, like I started in the video games industry. Like, you know, I went to university, did all my studies in 3D art and design and so on and so forth, and ended up working on multiple titles with the company Traveller's Tales. Worked on a lot of the Lego video games, and it was awesome. But you know, esports had always been at my heart, because, you know, I think I competed in MLG with PlanetSide 2 in the like community clash stuff that they were doing with MLG.
Okay.
That was really cool. I think that was my first competitive history early in the days when they were doing like the online. Actually, no, that's actually true. Yeah, early in the days when League of Legends, before it became like, you know, like a franchise system and household names, they did a lot of their tournaments online previously. Mm-hmm. And then you'd work through qualifiers on the online tournaments on the different websites, and then you could make it into like these bigger tournaments and go from there and there. And I remember doing that, and I think we had a team called COS, And okay. if some of them guys watch it, they'll cringe. But yeah, no, we used to do a lot on League of Legends and stuff back in the day. But esports has always just been, you know, at the heart of myself and also Ash, my fellow co-founder and fellow CEO. We've always been involved in it. Ash used to play Command & Conquer Red Alert competitively. And he did really well. I think he was like top 100 at one point in the world, which was really cool. So it's always been something that we've always had our hand in. We've always watched. We've always been involved in. I remember being in awe of TSM when they were sort of like rising up in the first start. You know, and watching the videos on YouTube and stuff. It was amazing. Like, I've literally lived the history of esports as a whole, and it's been great. But you know, basically, my time in the video game industry. It got very tough. Like, I'm sure you hear the stories all the time, especially as a journalist like yourself. You know, when you work in the industry, it can be extremely taxing on you physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was the grind. It's all real. Like, it all genuinely happens. Like, you know, the company turning around and saying, hey, you know what? We've got a deadline that's this time and all these things have gone wrong. We're going to entirely change the entire thing because the people we've got licensing with have just changed the entire story or something like that. Which did actually happen on one title. Last minute, we got told all the stuff that we told you was a lie because we had to keep it secret until the film was out. So you've got to redo half the game, Jeez. which was lots of fun. There was a lot of very, very, very long days. but that took its toll on me after a while. And an opportunity presented itself where we was like, you know what, let's go for this. And then immediately we got a really big sponsor and it was just like, this was it. Then life changed and, you know, I think we're 3 years later now and here we are, you know, it's amazing.
But what is it that led you to think, okay, I need to start my own thing as opposed to being part of someone else's?
So both me and Ash called each other one day and it's something that we've been talking about this kind of a little bit here and there. And, we both realized that our wives were pregnant at the same time.
Right.
So I called him and he called me and he was like, you know, oh dude, I've got something to tell you. And he's like, what? And I was like, oh, I've got something to tell you. And we both basically said, oh, wives are pregnant. It's like, oh shit. And then as we were sort of like thinking about stuff, like we both really loved our jobs. We, you know, Ash used to be in the army and then was working with kids with, you know, extra needs in schools and stuff like that.
Right.
With physical education, and I was working in the games industry. And whilst we loved our jobs, it was like, you know, we've got a family coming, and do we need to do more? Do we need to accelerate our own career paths? And do we need to become our own bosses? Because there was a lot of pressure on us in the jobs that we were in that made things harder. And it's like, do we need that when we've got a family on the way? It's like, should we, you know, would it be easier to be our own bosses? We was completely mistaken on that. It's a lot more stressful.
I could have told you that, mate.
but, it was a risk that we wanted to take for the betterment of our families. And, you know, we took the plunge. At first it was we'll take a soft plunge. We'll do this as a thing on the side. As like kind of like a hobby, right? But a hobby that requires lots of time, effort, and money. So we started doing that. But then almost immediately, because we had such a solid business plan, we got approached by a company called Social Chain. Mm-hmm. Now, they're a very big company.
Huge. Like, Stephen Bartlett, huge. Right?
Yeah, you know exactly. So you know who they are. And we got talking to them and we went for a meeting and immediately they was like, you know what? Like, let's do this. You know what I mean? We was like, really? He was like, yeah. So they gave us, I won't go into obviously logistics, but they gave us the opportunity to basically do this full time. Like that would have been our full time job then.
Okay.
So that's sort of like the level of arrangement we made. And this was, we're talking within weeks of like putting the company on the company's house and everything else. And, you know, we were kind of blown away by the traction of it. So it was kind of a snap decision. It was like, right, this is a bit of a scary moment. Do we actually want to put what we've accomplished so far and our lives on hold to see if we can make this happen? Because we've got the opportunity to do that. And it took us a couple of days to genuinely sit there and think through it and run the numbers and everything else. It's like, you know what, let's do this. Let's do this. And we did, and we walked in, we signed off on it, and away we went. And, you know, we haven't looked back, but I'd be remiss to say that it wasn't a very roller coaster of an experience. But, yeah, that's basically how it, in a short form how it came to be.
I had no idea that they were involved in any capacity, actually. But I don't know. I kind of seem like the anti Gary V now, where he's trying to preach the opposite of what Gary V typically does. You know, it's an interesting one. But so I'd say esports organizations are notorious for like not being profitable at this point, right? Mm. And I guess that's probably more true for the ones that are spending 25 mil to basically go into a lottery of whether something will be successful or not. Or
it's about franchise leagues.
Yeah, and TSM yesterday, at the time of recording this yesterday, TSM announced its $50 million fucking facility. $50 million, one, I think it's bullshit. Two, if they spent anywhere near that, they're doing it as a dick measuring competition against 100 Thieves and Team Liquid.
Absolutely.
And actually, I'm pretty sure they've claimed they're the only profitable organization. One, I know that's fucking bullshit. Two, spending 50 mil on a facility will not make you profit. So, with organizations pissing money, basically, right? but that's at like a higher level. Like, how has that been for you? I'm not asking you to go into how profitable you've been or how much you've lost, any of that kind of stuff. But like, has it been like a successful endeavor in that front? Because no one really talks about it candidly. You know, it's just kind of an unspoken thing that a few of us behind the scenes are aware of, you know?
I'm a pretty open dude. Like, I mean, you'll notice as, you know, we've been talking about a few things that are coming up for Diablos, but we're going to be doing this kind of thing more and more. Like, we've got a few things on the cards to do this kind of stuff more. Mm-hmm. And we think that there needs to be a lot more transparency within the industry as a whole. I think the problem that you have when you don't have the transparency, and I'll get onto your actual question, mm-hmm. I'm not dodging it.
No, I
think the major problem that you have when you don't have the transparency is that then there becomes unrealistic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let's say I'm a player and I go, wow, you know, it's so glamorous, the esports industry, you know, people are spending 50 million on like a facility and things like that. So you kind of go in with a different level of expectation of what you're worth. And that can really muddy the waters. And that's how you end up with situations like the Tfue situation, mm-hmm. right? Now, that is still also reflected on the smaller scale. So in terms of us, for example, we, again, won't mention any names and I won't mention any specific values, but, you know, people assumed because of the things that we were doing with MediaChain, like MediaChain were very much foot in the bill. They, you know, they were our first sponsor. Like, you know, it was with Gamebyte, they wanted us the primary sort of like name for sponsorship.
Right.
And I won't lie, they gave us a lot of money, like a lot of money. And we had the ability to function as a well-established organization, like out of the gate, you know, like immediately. But we were also very cautious at all times to not set too much of a precedent. And we didn't do it right at first.
Okay.
Because we didn't know the expectation of like, say, player salaries. And we, you know, one of our core goals has always and will always been, even from day one, was that if you're doing work, you deserve a wage. Like, no one should do this out of like, oh, you know, you'll get exposure. No, it doesn't work like that. Like, that's how it works. Like, you know, we'd worked in industries where that kind of thing was prevalent. Like, you know, working in the games industry, I did work as well, like freelance, and you've got people going, ah, yeah, it's great exposure for you, though. It's like, yeah, but it doesn't pay my bills. I can't go and buy bread with exposure. So we had the philosophy that if you're working for us, you deserve pay, right? With the player salaries, we had some players. Like, at first, we paid some very big salaries, for the size of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have too much of a bearing on the true value of it. And we learned that after our, say, first split. So in our first split, people were on four figures. Like, I'll say that for free. Like, people were on four figures.
Right.
Now, as we then realized as we got further down the line, is that there's a lot of people who talk a lot of things up. And as we became more savvy and we learned more and we met more people, we started to learn the real picture. And the problem with that is that that gets around. So people knew that we had money. And when you've got players coming to us, their expectation was also that they could get the same. And once we'd learned a lot from MediaChain, like Steve and the guys, like, you know, they taught us the true value of social media, like what that's worth in like actual monetary value, what sort of, you know, your CPMs mean and all the above. Like, we learned that quite quickly, but it was a little too late for our first split. Now, as we came into our second split, our second roster, we actually expanded into like things like CSGO and Hearthstone. We was like, okay, you know, we now know what this means. Like, if someone's got no social following, they don't stream, and all the above, like, their value is like minimal at best.
I agree.
So, but they were coming in going, oh, you know, we're four figures, right? You know, we can do as well as the last team did. And it's like, don't work like that. So it was a bit of an uphill battle, but we started to make it really reasonable and fair. I think we still continued to overpay somewhat because we wanted to give people chances and goals and something to aspire towards, right? So in terms of profitability, this is where it all sort of starts to fall apart because there's become a... There's sort of two types of team in the like national level scene, right?
Okay.
There's a team that will promise the world and deliver very little, but try to coerce relationships that mean that people will do stuff for free. Mm-hmm. And the teams that will scrape everything together to pay somebody, but then the players that play for them will always expect more. And I think we kind of sit in the middle because we will always pay, but what we won't do is make an argument with someone if they demand, well, we'll just go, well, that's just not going to happen. But then when we're seeing teams on the other side who they'll shit talk other people and they'll play other people down on inner circles to try and spread rumor and stuff like that. But yet, you know, that they're not even paying players. And it's like, how can you balance this? And this is the problem. This is the problem with nationalized scenes, which is like, you know, I'm sure we'll get into in a bit, which is why we've made a conscious attempt to distance ourselves from it. Like there's a lot of love. We've got a lot of love for the UK ecosystem. We wish it all the best and we hope for more from it. And we've tried to instill a level of, you know, respect on both ends from players and from organizations to better the scene. Because if there's less bad things happening within the scene will grow. But sponsors aren't looking at the scene because of the nature of that. Right. So.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. So I've got a question. I don't know. It might be an awkward one for you. I don't think it is. But and I could be wrong on it because I haven't done research because of time. But right, I believe you were in the UKLC last year, right?
We were, yes.
Okay, and that was run by LVP, and now the UKLC is run by DreamHack, and you're no longer in the competition. If I'm correct on that,
we are no longer in the competition.
Okay, what happened there? Because that to me seems like one of the most prominent UK competitions in esports, and that's why it could be an awkward conversation for you. But
it is an awkward conversation.
I love those.
You know, I still have a lot of love for Riot. I do. You know, but we made. I won't go into too much detail because I don't want to misrepresent anybody. But we made a conscious decision to come out of that league. The problem for us kind of echoes back to what we were discussing a second ago, is that the ecosystem itself isn't, not people, just the ecosystem itself isn't mature enough to a point where it could get to a sustainable level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unfortunately, you know, I'm not pulling any punches and we're not pulling any punches. You know what I mean? I'm not disillusioning anyone when I say that, you know, the viewership wasn't fantastic.
Okay.
We was expecting a lot more exposure. That didn't happen. You know, and we'd spent, you know, a lot of thousands on the ecosystem itself, whether it's free player salaries or creating content, you know, doing things like we took the players up a mountain, like to show like the rise of a player and like go through struggles and make some real life touching content and stuff like, you know, that costs like, you know, thousands of pounds. You know, we're investing this kind of thing into the scene, but yet others weren't. And, you know, the scene wasn't really progressing and growing as we would have liked. So it's a shame. And we'd love for it to get there. And we've always got a love for the scene and we will always like to return to the scene in the future. But right now, it's not at a stage where we think that what we're putting in is going to meet a return. Because unfortunately, it's not. And it's, you know, and lots of love for the guys at Riot. They're doing their best to try and make it work, right? You know, as you might have seen over just like today at the time of recording, like they announced the
NLC, the Northern League of Legends Championship, yeah.
So that's something they've been working on for a while. Like we were in discussion with them when they were talking about this.
Right.
And that, you know, we didn't agree with that as a direction because that doesn't elevate the UK scene. In our opinion, it didn't at the time. And I wish them all the best in that. The production of it looks great. You know, DreamHack are a great partner to be involved with. I think they're fantastic things. But, you know, from a UK standpoint, it's like, is it UK then? You know what I mean? And that's not trying to create borders or anything, but it's not the UK. Like, the UK is here. It can be done. It just needs the advertising push to say, hey, you know, we've got X many million people that play League of Legends in the country. How many people know that there is a esports scene? You know?
Okay. So as you say, with like the push, like the marketing push and stuff, right, in UK esports, BT getting involved with XL to me
massive
is huge, right? And from my interviews with a couple of people like XL, including Millie Preston, who's their new head of marketing, they're trying to position themselves as like the British brand, but with like global aspirations. What are your thoughts on that? And I guess like the evolution of XL over the past couple of years, because I mean it has developed quite a bit from what I saw as almost like a bedroom org into like a serious thing now, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, no, absolutely. The guys at XL have worked really hard. Like, you know, we've been playing against XL, like I say, for like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's actually been amazing to see what they've managed to do. They have cornered a market space. There isn't, you know, some people, like you say, would have said that we're a premium brand in the space, but I think that they've done amazingly well. Like they've you know, they've secured huge investment with Guinevere Capital. You know, they positioned themselves in the market by buying into LEC,
yeah,
which was, I think, was a bold move. It's a brave move, but yeah, I think it was also a fantastic move at the same time. Like, you know, it has elevated their brand. It has made them a globally recognized brand. And then bringing on, you know, on board people like, oh, I forget the two guys that have come
Robin
on board recently.
And Wu, yeah.
Yeah, you know, from massive brands like Adidas and stuff like that. You can't argue that that's going to reshape your brand dramatically. And it has. You've seen that in just the past 12 months. You know, they've gone from, like you say, they were never a bedroom org.
No, it's like, just my perception. It's just, I'm harsh like that.
Well, my perception is always going to be a little different because I've worked alongside these people.
Yeah.
Like they were our competition. So, but at the same time, like, you know, they just, poof, they did the right moves and the right thing. You know, partnering with Twickenham was huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then BT, it's stratospheric. It's really good. Like, you know, the fact that I'm literally seeing like posters and stuff with like the BTXL stuff. It's like, that's actually really cool. They might be competition to me. They might be a rival business to mine. But I still think from a UK standpoint, that's good. That's really good. The problem is there's not enough competition.
Yeah, you know? Well, I was going to ask, like, do you think you'll be in a better position than me on this, that the UK esports industry is really competitive with each other, or they're really chummy?
They look chubby,
right?
They look chubby. There's a lot of fake friends in the UK esports ecosystem.
And why do you think that is?
I mean, just through my experience, like.
No, I mean, why do you think people are operating that way?
Because everyone's fighting for the same goal. So the problem that you have is that this isn't all the teams by all means. Like, you know, I actually have a lot of love for almost all of the different team owners. I especially have a lot of love for, you know, some of the people that have worked with the different teams. You know, like there's some graphics people, you know who you are, I don't need to say your name. But, you know, like there's some graphics people that have worked with a lot of different teams. There's some video people that work with a lot of different teams. Like there's some amazing individuals that are part of the UK esports scene, which are fantastic. The problem is, some of the people at the top of them different organizations, they are all, unfortunately, this isn't them being horrible by nature, I don't assume, but the nature of the business is that you're all clamoring for the same sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
You're all clamoring to get into the same leagues, and you're all clamoring to look the best, because right now the sponsor pool is very thin. You know, like a primary sponsor within the space would have been someone like MSI. Like they've been quite prominent. They've sponsored quite often, into different teams and different tournaments. You know, you could say the same for like HyperX, but no one else is really doing much in the space. And it's because the UK esports scene prior to like, say, our entry had a really bad name in some areas like CSGO and stuff because of some of the things that had happened in that. Like, and that obviously put sponsors off. When we've spoken to sponsors that I speak to, you know, like personally, they've said this. They said like, oh, well, this thing happened this year and blah, blah, blah. And it's just, it really puts us off and it makes it difficult to go, let's align our brand with that space. So that's something that we tried to make a change on because we could, you know, we was in a stable position. We was like, hey, you know, Gamebyte, they've got us in a position where we can just roll with this. And then we can be talking to other sponsors and saying, hey, look, this is how it can be. And that was working, you know, in some respects, but it's still like, they're not ready to activate in the scene because the scene isn't mature enough, like in some respects. Like, unfortunately, mm-hmm. in League of Legends, there's just not the viewership. Whereas, like, you know, you look at some of the scenes which you would call smaller, but like World of Warcraft, which is one of our core games now.
Yeah.
Any game that they put up, you're talking tens of thousands of viewers. Like, not 50, not 100, not 1,000, tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could make the argument that League of Legends is a way bigger game, but yet in terms of activation, the other's much bigger. And it's a shame.
No, that's interesting. So do I want to ask that? Yeah, I'll ask it. Right.
Ask it and I'll say whether I can answer it. I'm trying to be as candid as I can.
No. This isn't anything that can endanger you in any way. As press, right? So Esports Insider and then as Dom in charge of Esports News UK, for example.
Yep.
Have we done a good enough job covering the scene? And if not, what could we do better to support the UK esports scene?
It's a perfect question. I think Dom is, or was for a lot of the time, he went through a period because he had children. Mm-hmm. He had twins like we've got.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah. I mean, this hairline isn't going back for a reason, you know. Anyway, yeah, you know, Dom has actually been quite good at covering the UK scene. He's got a lot of love for the UK scene and he does consistently cover it. But, you know, in terms of any of the sort of publications, like, you know, like yourself with ESI and stuff like that, like, I don't think it does get enough light, but because there usually isn't as much news.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. Like, you know, it's very difficult. So, like, I look at it from our perspective, like, we had some money, but then we was always careful at how we spent it, because it's like, you know, in terms of a return, we're not really seeing an amazing return right now for what we're putting in. So it's like, I'm not going to sign off spending 20 grand to do some really cool content piece that's going to turn heads, because we go, is that going to bring us a return, or is that going to bring everyone else a return? And it becomes a juggling battle, when, especially when you're talking to your board of directors and you know, your other investors and stuff, and you're like, you know, yeah, I want to do this, and it'll be great for the scene, and they'll go, yeah, what's it good? Is it good for us? And they'll go, mm-hmm. And that's the problem,
right?
You know, and it would have been great, you know, and very easy for publications like yourselves to cover stuff, or to even talk to us about stories, or just interviewing the scene and things like that, and that could have potentially elevated it, and it probably still can, but as you can see, Riot's, again, I don't want to speak for Riot, but like, Riot have moved off to do what they've done that came out today. That should be an indication that the push wasn't working, that the change wasn't coming. So they had to try and align another region as well, which they're doing with the Nordics. And I think that's a good thing. I think that'll probably help them in the long run. But will it help the UK? I don't know. Like, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. Because I can speak from experience in recent times. All of Excel's moves, for example, but as we said, it's kind of elevated in the past couple of years. But like with BT and HyperX and Nuzu and the highs of Millie, Robin and Nwuta, and I've done actual news pieces on them and I interviewed them when things have happened, trying to do it that way. If you go on the website now, I've rejigged the layout of the menus,
yeah, yeah.
The categories and stuff, so you can, when you go into markets, UK's got its own bit there when,
yep,
no other individual country has its own thing, you know. Like, I'm doing little bits and bobs to try and help, but
yeah,
it's the moves that do happen don't match the level of those that are happening in, say, China or in
absolutely
in North America. It's really, yeah, hard for me to legislate paying one of our writers to cover like the smallest seems to be the smallest thing ever, because in comparison to Team Liquid, whatever they do, or what, I guess Fnatic, even though they're supposed, yeah, to be, you know, they've kind of ditched the scene in a sense. I think they don't really care about being seen as a UK brand, really. They've got Well, they've got Asian PUBG mobile team and all that kind of stuff. Yep. They've gone global with it. So, I mean, it makes sense on that front. But, yeah, I was just wondering if there's anything more we could do on our end. But I can say one thing that we'll be covering. By the time this podcast goes live, the news will be broken about your organization's partnership with Kappa. Right, so I'd love to talk about that a bit. So Kappa, my knowledge is, prior to your deal with them being announced, it had two partners in esports, and that's Vex, and then it's Royal Never Give Up Dota 2 side. Fucking hell, that's too many. RNG's Dota 2 team, right?
Yeah, got lots of letters there.
Yeah, it's too many, man. There's too many, but I believe they were the only two partnerships. The one with Vexed, I believe,
they also did one with FaZe Clan.
That's not a partnership, that was a collaboration. Get there. Yes. Fuck out of here, I'm right. Whew. You scared me for a second. I was like, fuck, I've missed one. So yeah, I've got all these little details in me.
Yeah.
But I think the Vex one was in, say, August, September. They released a line in, like, December, I think. Yeah. The RNG thing was in, it was on January 1st, I should say, of this year, I believe, or the 2nd. And then
I'll agree with you. I can't remember.
Come on. And then they unveiled their, like, co-branded, like, custom team jerseys earlier this week or late last week for RNG as well. So, you're one of the first with, like, bigger, obviously, Italian sportswear brand. Like, it is big. Mm. I mean, I can't say I've worn Kappa in the past 15 years or anything, but I know of Kappa, obviously, very well.
Yes.
Like, the logo is very recognisable. So, can you speak to me a bit about that? Because, obviously, that's quite a big deal.
Absolutely, yeah. So Kappa was something that we've worked on for some time. And, you know, it's one of them. Like, we're making a lot of different changes to it organizationally. As you saw, we've moved away from, like, national level sort of esports. We're trying to internationalize, but we want to be still recognized as a UK brand. But to be to the level of professionalism that we want to go to, we have to then look professional as well. And we really wanted to have a brand associated with us, especially in terms of team wear and so on and so forth, that really stood out. And, you know, we got talking with Kappa, and it just seemed to go from strength to strength. Like, their sort of ideals aligned with ours. Like, it was just amazing. And, you know, it took some time, like all good deals do, but to be honored with them saying that that's something that they'd like to do, just really stood out for us as, like, you know, this is we're on track now. We are where we want to be. We are what we think we are. And, you know, to be able to get that, like, Vex pulled that off as well. And, you know, Vex's stuff looked amazing. Like, it really made them stand out. Like, everyone's got these really cool kits, right? Everyone's got these really cool, like, hoodies and things that are all branded and stuff like that. But when you align with a clothing brand in that respect, it's totally different. Like, you look at Vex stuff and it just looks amazing. You know what I mean? Like, it changes the game. And, you know, to know that we're in such a little small list of brands like that, it just makes us feel amazing. And we couldn't be more thankful to Kappa for this partnership. It's going to be amazing.
So what necessarily does it entail? Because is it just a case of them supplying kit, or will there be collaborative lines and such? Like, what can you say about it? I know in the press release, it did mention there would be lines down the line, I'm pretty sure. So I'm not catching you out or anything.
No. There will be collaborative lines. They will be our primary team wear supplier, and, you know, we've worked with them on a design that hasn't been released yet, unfortunately, because of the, I don't know if you can mention it or not, but the current economic
situation. I mention it all the time. Yeah, it's fucking everything up. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was going on YouTube, and I know the
demonetizing. Oh, it will. Yeah, yeah.
If you mentioned the word,
you say so demonetizing.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not monetizing this anyway. I'm not doing it for money.
Oh, right. Well, there you go then. Yeah. So coronavirus.
Yeah. Fuck YouTube. Fuck coronavirus.
But yeah, no. The because of the current situation, we haven't been able to do what we wanted to do, because the plan was with Kappa was to do, obviously, a full fancy release. But given the timescales and everything else, we thought it would be appropriate to get something out there now. But, you know, yeah, there's some collaborative lines coming up, and there's a lot of nice stuff that I can't wait to show you all, but obviously I can't show you today because there's nothing here yet.
So do you see it as, like, a kind of marquee partnership for UK esports? Do you think it's of that caliber?
Absolutely. You know, this is a international, you know, global clothing brand. This isn't a simple, like, oh, you know, we've partnered with
Raven.
Joe. Yeah. You know, no flint.
Gamers apparel. I'll throw him under the bus. It's fine, mate.
Well, you can. I'll stay very neutral.
That's
fine. But no. You know, we're not. They've done great for the UK scene. They have, but this is an international brand. This is way beyond that. And I'm sure they wouldn't mind me saying that. You know, they make some amazing kit and everything else, but this is a step above. This is what Premiership football teams use. This is what rugby teams use. These are premium brands that are related to a professional system, and which is the direction that we wanted to go.
Okay, no, that's cool. Because I mean, obviously, we've seen the rise of like Nike. They've got Oh God, Vodafone Giants, SK Gaming. I'm not going to go through them all. I've got them all, and
there's an exhaustive list.
Yeah, Adidas Champions kind of had a revival, and I mean, I don't like how Champions done it, but it's worked. So we're seeing more of the sportswear, but I don't know how relevant sportswear is to esports, because we don't need the breathable material that allows us to perspire properly on our 5 mile runs. Like, it's not happening. We're sat down.
I have to disagree.
Let's go.
Do you know why? Right, okay.
I'd love to know. I've worn
a lot of these kits. Like, so for example, we used to be with Armour Centrum, right?
Okay.
Now, the best line that we had was our most recent line. And on the sides of the kit, like, it was breathable, right? Now, the reason that is helpful is everyone that's watching this, including yourself, you've had a long gaming session, right? Now,
not in recent years, unfortunately, but yeah.
No. But you've had them, right?
Right.
And you're sat there, you know, you're getting hot, you're getting sweaty, and everything else. It's good to have that kind of thing going, right? It's good to have that. But then when you add studio lights in, so for example, with was it the first Forger Champions? We went to Barcelona,
right?
It was a live on stage event. It was obviously streamed out from stage and everything else. Studio lights, loads of machines, cameras, everything else. It gets hot. Like, really hot in places like that. Like, right. Even if it's heavily air conditioned, it gets very hot. And, you know, I know I was thankful, and I wasn't even playing. Like, I know I was thankful. I was just backstage watching the game and talking with the coaches and stuff like that. And I was sweating. It was like, I'm really thankful I've not got a big cotton t-shirt on, because I'd have died. Like, I'd have just passed out. Whereas, you know, the players who were on stage with all the lights on them and everything else, they've got to have been feeling it worse. So to have premium kit on you that does have that, does offer that breathability, is a big difference. Like,
right.
you could actually go to the point of saying it's a performance difference, because if someone's, you know, getting feeling the heat, you don't really want that when you've got to have your head in the game. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, when it comes to jerseys, though, right, in sports, they're traditionally used to differentiate people with the numbers and such, and we've seen, I think Overwatch League does it now, especially with its staple kind of collaboration shit. I really like staple stuff, actually, but I'm still going to rag it. I don't see the point in it. But I know a jersey is a really good place to for obviously jersey sponsorships and stuff, right? So it's an important part of that. But apart from that, I feel like we can do something to deviate from sports. I think esports looks to sports way too much for everything. I think on the business side of stuff, it can sometimes make sense, but in terms of the demands of players in esports compared to a footy player or something like that, I do think they're different, right? And it'll take someone to invest in that. I don't know if Puma will do it with their Cloud9 stuff or anything like that, but yeah, I don't know. It just seems a bit novel and just copying for the sake of it, trying to be professional for the sake of being professional.
Well, if you think about it, it's kind of necessary in some respects, because, like, okay, so let's use traditional sport as an example. Traditional sport is built off tribalization, right? And if you look at the UK in general, like, tribalization is a big deal. Like, you know, people have arguments and fights over something completely inane as...
I love it.
Which football team you like. And you love it. It's part of the culture, right? And it's part of the culture in a lot of cultures. Cultures where traditional sports are a huge deal. These things matter. So everyone has their banner, the flag that they carry, or whatever. Like, that's your jersey. So, like, in the UK, you know, you see people that they'll wear their team's shirt on the street, but they wouldn't dare wear another one.
No.
And what that is that's your status symbol of, like, this is my team.
I agree with that. I just think we could innovate it a bit, so it's not a fucking football jersey that's just got an esports team's logo on it, you know? That's all. I mean, I do agree with having branded merchandise and stuff, like, 100%. But I don't know. I'm not an apparel guy in terms of I don't work in that industry, so I can't say. No. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems to me, it just seems like, oh, they do it, so we should do it.
There's a bigger side of it as well, like, which I think goes unrecognized a lot of the time, is like if you look at the sort of pattern of sponsorship. So if you look at that as a grander scope, like sponsors that are used to traditional sports are just activating into esports now, mm-hmm. especially now because of like the whole coronavirus stuff. Like yeah. it's like, wait, we've got a market that's invulnerable to this kind of thing. Not invulnerable.
No, we're certainly getting smacked the shit out of, but we can keep shit moving.
It's resilient, right? Like, you know, if we can still produce the same thing just without a live venue. We can still have competition that is sometimes needs a bit of adjustment, but it can still go on.
Right.
Like, it doesn't grind it to a halt. We can adjust, we can adapt, we can survive. Now, that is activating, and there's a lot of other reasons why it's activating, but the traditional sponsors are activating into esports because of a lot of reasons, but that's happening. Now, they're used to being, you know, understanding football and understanding what having your name on a jersey means in football and so on and so forth. Like, they're used to that kind of thing. So as a fledgling business, like an ecosystem, you've got to go with where the money's coming from. And if the money's coming from these places, then you've got to give them what they're used to.
I don't know. I kind of think if they want to get involved with us, then they have to play by our rules.
I couldn't agree more. And that will happen over time. But when there isn't enough money, as you say, like you said it rightly so, like esports isn't something where teams are making multiple millions. They're not always in profit. No. Like, you've got to go with the market. And if the market is dictated by how the money comes in, so you've got to play by that rule. And I think that's why it's a common theme. And I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not saying I completely agree with it.
Right.
But it is a contributing factor, most definitely.
I hate it. I wish I could, like, put myself in, like, a sleep and wake up 20 years later and be at the point where we all want to be with esports, because it's at the moment, it really exhausts me, for many reasons, of course, but...
especially as a journalist, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, now I've actually mostly transitioned into my editor role. Now I'd say, like, I've fully taken things on, so the whole, like, journalistic side, it is there, but it's... I can't go into it anywhere near as much as I would like, but I also like what I'm doing now, and I'm liking smashing the competition. Like, our competition right now is ourselves. Like, it's insane. As soon as I start stepping shit up and fully getting into the role, like, it's fucking insane, mate. Like, I'm not going to go into it too much, because I do like the guys over at another website, but I mean, it's scary.
Which other website is that?
Observer, Esports Observer.
Oh, it's
on the manager. I will never shrink from that shit. I was just trying to be nice, but no, I'll never shrink from anything. I enjoy it way too much calling people out. But no, they're decent guys there. But yeah, just at the moment, they can't keep up. I don't know what's going on over there, but it's interesting. It's kind of like watching North America versus UK in esports, actually. But
what do you mean?
UK can't keep up. Like, Smooth, you can't catch a fucking break.
Listen. You know, it depends on what esport you're looking at. Because if you look at, you know...
any credible one?
World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft is credible. Like, Method. They're a UK organization. Yeah. You could argue the North America as well, but they do pretty well. Damn well.
Yeah, they're doing all right with that.
You know, Sko's from the UK. Like, they're smashing it.
Yeah, true. He was there watching me as I won the UK Esports Award for Reporter of the Year last year. Yeah, that's true.
There you go. There you go.
I don't give a fuck about that thing. But they're doing well. They've one of their partnerships recently with Do You, like Chinese. I don't know how to pronounce that. Do You? I don't know. I don't have accents on lock. And pronunciations on lock, but Chinese live streaming platform, I think 40% owned by Tencent, you know, the fucking evil overlords.
The evil overlords,
who are just fucking getting the claws more and more into esports as time goes on, and scaring me more and more as well. Because eventually, I will be owned by Tencent at some point.
You know, have you ever seen Wall-E?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I've obviously seen it. I've got kids, right? And we've got Disney Plus.
If that's the excuse you need, mate,
no advertisement, but get Disney Plus, it's worth. But in Wall-E, there's a company called By and Large, and they literally become like the company, right? Like, they take over everything. Like, there's no presidents anymore. It's just By and Large, right?
It's just like a Disney or a Tencent. Yeah.
Yes. So that's Tencent. Like, very that's on where the nose, it will be. Actually.
With Disney fucking streaming that.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this company owns everything. It's evil. And they own Pixar and Lucasfilm and fucking Marvel and National Geographic and Alpha Fox and fucking everything. Man. It's ESPN. But we won't get into ESPN esports over here. We don't do that. I'm trying to be good. But I want to... So we're at 45 minutes and I tend to keep this at about an hour or so. And I know there's 50 million things to talk about. But I guess for the theme of it, I want to... Like, what do you think... overall we could do for the UK esports industry, what's what like realistically? I know we said we've spoken on it a bit, but like going into it a bit more, like the reasons we're behind like North America, for example, and what really needs to change, like what do you think are the most prevalent points there?
For me, it's a top down situation. So you know, the companies that are going to do tournaments within the UK scene, like no company is can escape this really, but any of the companies that are doing, any of the production companies that are doing these, they need to really put the money behind it. There needs to be a reason to get an audience excited. You know, you could make the huge argument that Dota 2 became really, really super massive when they threw enormous prize pools, because people go, what? That hits the news. People go, that's insane. And then people tribalize themselves because they go, my team won that. Right. You know what I mean? There's no prestige. And I think that is now the core issue, because there's nothing for the viewership to get behind. Like, there's always a reason for an org to rise up, and there's always a reason for players to want to play. But what there isn't is a captivation for the audience. Now, that can come from lots of different things, but it's got to have a starting point, and that starting point has to be from these games companies who are going to be putting together these tournaments, saying, hey, we're going to give you something exciting that is going to activate the viewer.
So do you not think ESL UK is doing a decent enough job then, really, with its premiership and that?
With the ESL Premiership?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in what respect? In terms of CSGO?
Just in general, do you think they're not doing a good enough job to excite viewers and such?
No, I think they're all doing amazing job individually. All the different, like, not just the production companies, but the developers as well. They're all doing their own good job. But the problem is, it's what is going to captivate the audience.
Right.
We use League of Legends as an example. Like, let's talk about prize pool. The prize pool was like 60 grand. Like, more than that's probably been spent in player wages over the season. Right.
Right.
Now. When you're a viewer, it's like, oh, 60k, that's a lot of money, but they're probably going to walk away with 10 grand, right? Like, no one's really like, well, that's amazing. Like, but you're constantly selling an illusion. You're selling a life that you want people to want to attain. That is what esports is. That's what football is. That's what influencer marketing is. That's what YouTube is. All of the above, right? Like, you look at Mr. Beast. People love Mr. Beast because he does crazy things with mad amounts of money, right? Or, you know, you look at other people that are doing stuff, they're doing things because it's like, this is amazing. Wouldn't it be cool to be doing this, right?
Right.
Now, the problem is, like, that's got to have a starting point, and then it can be cultivated by the production company who are doing the actual broadcast, like ESL. It can then be exacerbated by the organizations and the teams, and then it can be multiplied by the players in their own personal streams and personal communications on social media, right? And that's how it's got to work. It's got to come from the top down, because unless you attract the people in the first place, you can't do the other bits, because people have to be activated into it. And the easiest way to do that is either something really huge, like some big ticket to something, or really crazy big prize pools. And that's the only way it can work. And they'll yield their own results. It's got a returnable investment. Like, you know that if you put, like, because they were all doing it like 2-3 years ago, like even just the other year, you know, they're all doing these crazy big prize pools for things like Worlds and all these other big tournaments, like even in CSGO and things like that. And it makes crazy viewing. Like, you look at, was it 2 years ago, CSGO, like the big finals, right? There was a lot of money on the line. It had the biggest viewership they've ever had, because it was the biggest prize pool.
Do you think that's why, though, or do you think it's the prestige of winning an event, or like an underdog story and following the brands that are competing?
The thing is, right now, people want something to get the teeth into, especially at a time of crisis like this, right? More and more each year as we go by, people are becoming, like, you know, disenfranchised with, like, football and traditional sports, and they want something to get their teeth into and to tribalize themselves with.
Right.
if you have something that's going to hit papers and you have something that sounds crazy, it's going to make people go, I'll give that a look. Because your pool of viewership is only so big, and the pool is growing each year. But if you encourage that growth, you can bring that to where you need it. Like, so if it is that you need to increase the viewership in your national scene, make it a ticket into like the playoffs for Worlds or whatever, or to get into LCS. Like, the biggest thing that we lost from national scenes around the globe in every game was going into franchise. Like, when franchises happened, you essentially killed the rest of the scenes. Like, you could make the argument that in the US, you know, like teams like TSM made themselves what they are because the fact that the ecosystem was like a level playing field, and anyone could get there. So they sold this dream of like, hey, look, we made it here, you can too. And then it franchised and it didn't matter. And TSM still did well because they were already massive. But there's no way to get there. There's no aspiration because you can't get there. You know what I mean? You can be a good player and you can get picked up by this team, but you couldn't make it there as your big name. You couldn't create a new name.
Right.
That works in the national scene too. Like, why watch the national scene when I can watch LEC? Why watch the LEC when I can watch Worlds? You know.
Yeah, I kind of think like running events in esports is typically not very fruitful as it is. So like putting up, say, your prize pool from 60k to 250k, with no guaranteed like return on that kind of investment. And I know like even at the largest scale, like ESL is not making money with a major. They're spending over $1 million to put that together, and then giving away tickets to Katowice. You know what I mean? Just to fill up the stadium so they can get some nice pictures and sell the ideal that is, oh my God, this is the complete event, when reality is it's not a successful endeavor when it comes to financially, right?
But it doesn't necessarily need to be money, like I said. It could be like a ticket into a bigger event. It could be, you know, the chance to play against some of the biggest teams in the world, things
but
like that.
But I don't think... with the UK fan base is at the moment, do you think it's valuable enough for say Riot Games to want to incentivize people that way? Do they really need that?
If you want to grow the scene in the UK, yeah, you've got. If it's your own product, you have to cultivate it yourself. Like, who else is going to do it? Riot Games have arguably got one of the biggest shareholdings in the viewership of esports. Like, right. They've got immense figures, they've got immense social followings and all the above. Imagine if just for a moment it was pushed through that. It would be immense. You could make any scene massive.
Right.
Because I guarantee they've got millions of people that watch here. Like, let's use CSGO as an example. You could say the same CSGO, any game, doesn't matter the game, right? They've all got these massive followings, but they franchise and then they try to create these other scenes as well to, like, you know, incentivize people on a beginner level up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can cultivate that with what you've already got. But if you don't cultivate what you've already got, it's not just going to come out of nowhere because people are following that.
Right. I think one thing I've observed, and you'll know better than me on this, but it seems like there are not many really prominent UK esports players. Like, obviously, we've got like Smuya, who's kind of notorious for being toxic as fuck, actually. But he's proven that he's a good AWPer again. Like, he got it back with Chaos and then visa problems, so he's been fucking released from there, so that's fucked. But like, it doesn't seem like there are a shit ton of like personalities who, as you said earlier, have like the value by themselves with a big social following, and they're creating regular content and they're streaming often and stuff. I could be wrong on that, and maybe they are doing it, but they're just not, for whatever reason, not getting any sort of audience and building up anything there. But I don't really see many like super popular UK players where like Simple for whatever reason. But he's huge, but obviously he's the best. But like, he streams. He doesn't need to. Everyone's going to follow him anyway because of his reputation. But he streams during the off time and even when he's just practicing or pugging, whatever it may be, you know. Mm. But I don't see. I say, like, for me, I can't think of anyone particularly bigger than Smuya. I could be wrong. It might be one or two people. But even he's like, not a superstar.
Well, there was like Snoopy in League of Legends, weren't they? He was a big. Are you okay?
Yeah, I just dropped something. All good.
Sorry. Yeah, you had like a Snoopy. He was, you know, he was a big player. He was from the UK. He was from Scotland.
Yeah.
UK, isn't it? You know,
is he running Pipeline now? Is it Pipeline?
Yeah, he's running Pipeline. Pipeline's amazing. You know, amazing thing. He was doing a lot of work with Facebook, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as well. Like, you know, he was a big player. He was like, you know, he was on world stage. Like, he's
but
huge.
Where
player.
Are they now? Right now.
I mean, but that's the problem when you kill the ecosystem. Because if you cut the tail off, you've only got the head left, and it's not going to grow down. It's going to grow up.
But the world of social media and then streaming is somewhat separate from the esports side of stuff, right?
Absolutely, in every possible way.
So streaming is it provides quite a lot of equality in a sense where anyone can kind of make it. I guess part of it is luck in a sense of actually getting picked up and getting the break and such. But and Valorant's kind of helping with that a little bit for smaller streamers now with the drops such. But I don't know. I think a big thing is turning yourself into somebody that people will want to sign, like, desperately, beyond game skill, right? And it's like with journalists, actually. And, I mean, we're coming to the end of the time, so I won't give a fucking huge speech on this, but there are some of the most highly regarded journalists in the scene are really popular because they're doing video content, they've put their personality out there, they've got big social followings. If you look at the actual output, it's not really that much better than a lot of other people.
No.
And that could be the same with, obviously it's a tiny bit different when it comes to competing, like you still need to be good on a competitive level, but if you have that power behind you, you're more likely to get some opportunities, right? And you could probably drive your salary up and then you'll actually benefit the team as well, and then it feeds into it that way, do you not think?
Well, it's not just that, like there's a sort of objective reality that the games themselves don't earn organizations a lot of money. Like, so why should they make that investment to pay lots of money if the game itself doesn't earn them a lot of money? Now it can do, like, don't get me wrong, you know, when you got millions of prize pool, yeah, you're great, you know, you can demand like a 70k salary, you know what I mean? But the objective reality is that on a national scene, what you want to do is, and this is my advice to anybody looking to get into esports, yes, be very good at the game that you're playing, put the hours in, put the practice in like you would with any other sport, but create yourself a social following, create yourself a personality, create yourself a way to interact with people who will be your fans.
You need to build a brand, yeah.
You've got to build a personal brand. Like every single one of our players that we've taken on, we've said this to every single time. And some of them have really taken on it. Some of them have done really well. Like, you know, go and check them out. Look at like the history of some of our players. Go and check them out if you're on social media still. Like, go and watch them. Go and follow them. And that's the only way you can become valuable to a brand, because I can, as a business owner, as an esports owner, I can sell that to a sponsor. Mm-hmm. I can say, hey, I've got a network of, say, 5 million minutes watched. Like, these are my personalities. Look at this cool content that they make. Imagine your product, service, whatever, there. And I can sell that. That is what's important to me. I would sooner take a team that is of a reasonable standard of play, but that has a fantastic social following, like something that's marketable. That is what's important to esports.
And people would get behind that more on an audience level as well. Like, if they had their favorite personalities and such, even if they were not quite competing, they would root for them. They would go and watch and they'll subscribe and like and spam in the Twitch chat and all that. So I think I agree with what you're saying. There needs to be more support from the top down, but I also think like the bottom up, there could be some work. So it seems like an overall overhaul. That was almost like an Eminem lyric or something, actually. Jesus Christ. An overall overhaul. I'm going to start spitting bars later tonight. This is my last ever podcast. I'm going into the rap game. So it's interesting. It seems like there's a lot of work, though. It does seem like there's also some forward steps as well that have been taken in the past, say, 12 months.
Yeah. The problem is that everything's coming from the middle. Everything's coming from the orgs. Like, you know, you look at like G2, for example, like, goddamn, like the work that Carlos puts in is immense. Like, you know, and I'm sure the rest of his team, like, you know, they're amazing. But like all of the work in esports at the moment, and this isn't to blow my head or any other org's head. Like, it's a categorical fact. Like, the majority of the work comes in from the orgs, and they put in, they make sure that the players are all paid. They also make sure that there's enough viewership that comes into these tournaments, because they're providing the content and things like that. That is where they want to see, because they want to see the players. You want to see that. Like, that's what people are interested in. You want to be the player. You don't, you know, no offense to everyone else, you don't want to be the other people that work behind the scenes. Of like course. That's not
where our jobs are not glamorous.
No. My job isn't glamorous. No one wants to be me sat bloody writing emails all day. No one wants to be me. Like, I'm not the people that people are going to follow. But yet, you know, like any pro player, that's what they want to see. And it's the orgs that are providing that. The orgs that are providing the money to make sure that they can do that as a job. It's the orgs that are giving them the social media support to make sure that their content is ready and created, and that takes the ease off them to have content out there that people can interact with and digest. Like, so, but then on the lower scale, you've got the orgs that are still trying to provide that, but the players that don't want to put the effort in. And then the other side of it, the tournaments that aren't supporting the ecosystem enough. And there's just this big disparity on both ends, and there's this bit in the middle, and you can't do much when you're in the middle. You've got to be at the top or the bottom to be able to either push up or push down.
That's interesting. So UK is just middle of the pack.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. There's a lot of fantastic orgs, like, you know, massive, like, I would like to shout this out, like, massive congrats to the guys over at Feeling, like, you know.
Who's Feeling? I only know Monster Rugby Gaming.
Well, this is why I wanted to say congrats. You know, like, they've put effort in. They've put a lot of effort in. They've done a lot of support to the players. Like, they got, you know, proper coaches behind people and stuff like that, like we did and stuff. And, you know, they really did a really great run in, like, the previous season. It was fantastic, you know. And it goes to show, like, the effort that's put in there, it shines. And this is why I wanted to suggest it, because that's not me then. That's not me saying anything about me and you know, blowing my head up or my org's head up. This is someone completely different, but that's a prime example. And then they've gone ahead and pulled in, you know, a sporting team and combined to become Monster Gaming, right? Now, that shows how much is coming in from the middle. Do you get what I mean?
Right.
And like, mm-hmm. you identified, how many of the streamers in the UK scene do you know? Mm-hmm. Like, in, let's say in League of Legends, we use the League of Legends example. There's not that many. I mean, there's some that are great, but there's not that many. No. And there could be more. Like, and this is, and the same on the other end. This is why there's this big sort of, like, stretch on either end. It's all coming from the middle.
Well, we will leave that here, because I am very middle of the pack myself. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I've got to sleep at some point this week. So, well, thank you for coming on. This is your time to plug yourself, plug your organisation. You do what you want with it. It's your time to shine, our kid.
So search everything Diablos from our website, which has got loads of new things coming soon, as well as our web store, which is also coming soon. Follow Diablos on social media, on Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever you are. We've got a page there. Join into all the fun. Got loads of cool things coming up. Just turn on notifications and you'll see what happens.
There we go. Thank you for coming on, mate, and taking the time. I appreciate it.
No worries, dude.
Tackling the tricky subject of the UK. I mean, I don't know. I'm not the best person to discuss it, but I'm gonna do what I can, man, to put some spotlight on it when it's deserved. I'm not gonna do it from a bias, because that's not me.
Yeah.
But when it's deserved, you know, I'll do what I can to put some spotlight on it a little bit, and hopefully people pick up on it, you know. At least, you know, I'm paying attention, if nothing else. One person is.
There's a reality. I think there's a lot of love that goes into the UK scene, but again, it's all from the middle. Like, you're in the middle as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if that's good or not. I'm going to get to the top, though. You fucking watch.
No, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that.
you're just pretty fucking average, Adam, you know.
No, you know what I mean. Like, in terms of...
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, of course. No, yeah, I'm just being a twat. No worries. Well, thank you for tuning in. If you've watched or listened, it's on every platform, absolutely everywhere. If it's not on there, then it's not worthwhile, so I'm not putting the effort there. Episode 21, I think. Could be 20, 22. I think it's 21, though. If I get that right, then you've mandated to like this video. Every Tuesday, a new episode comes out. Again, it's the Adam Fitch Podcast, hosted by Adam Fitch. Get to fucking know. I'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.